This is Edge Cases, a podcast about mostly Apple-related software development, featuring myself and my co-host, the Batman and Robin of Objective-C. I'm Andrew Pontius.
And I'm Totally Batman, Will French.
This is episode 27. It's Saturday, November 17th, 2012. What's our topic this week, Batman?
Mo Generator. And you rolled over on that, be assigned Robin, way too easy.
Well, I was going to argue. I have to get through the spiel. We can't stop the spiel and talk about something else.
Okay.
I was actually thinking, you know, when I was thinking about doing this, who could be whom? And I think either one of us could play the Robin role pretty well.
Okay.
And there you go. We'll leave it at that. So, did you say the topic already?
I already did. Yes, it's a Mo generator lost in the Batman references.
Mo Robba generator. Okay. So I actually have gotten some feedback about our last episode.
Yeah, please. And oh yeah, I also have a correction to make too. So, but you first. Okay.
And so a bunch of people emailed me or tweeted me about UI automation. And that is a new, well, not really that new. That is a feature of iOS that lets you test UI through the accessibility APIs, as well as through regular UI gestures, steps. And it's something that, yes, I totally missed first time around. And I won't talk about it in any depth today because this is not my topic episode. But if I don't, I'm planning on writing a blog post about it, going over it in more detail. So I will do that, and I will mention that next week in a little bit more detail once I've actually written it. But it was certainly a good catch by everyone who sent that in. That's probably the most feedback we've gotten on an episode, telling me I missed something. So kudos, everybody. And again, and that'll be part of, I'll be responding to that shortly.
Okay. And my feedback is in the last week's episode about Cappuccino, I mentioned that it's GPL. And I realize I've never pronounced his last name, but Randy Luke, I don't know, but he's me1000 on Twitter, and I've talked to him extensively and met him in person, all this, but apparently I've never bothered learning how to pronounce his last name. But he sent me that correction, so I appreciate that. It, of course, that means that the GPL of Cappuccino does not infect your code. Because it's LGPL, so the changes you make to Cappuccino have to be opened. But again, as I said in the last week's episode, it doesn't really matter. Was it last week or
2 weeks?
2 weeks ago. I should say it's the last episode I did. So that 2 weeks ago, and so it didn't. So
our heroes.
Yes. So we're. It's not very bad man of me. Maybe I am Robin. Okay.
Right. So it's LGPL. So while it's still GPL'd itself. You can link against it directly.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's very useful of it.
Yeah. Okay. And so, do you have any more follow-up? Let's get into it.
Nope. Take it away.
Okay. So this week I shipped version 1.27.
I saw that.
Of Mo Generator. And Mo Generator was one of the topics that was like on my list of, again, the first list of things topics we could possibly address on Edge Cases. I kind of went through the list of things we could talk about, and one of the very early ones was Mo Generator. So I don't know what episode we're on now, but is this going to be in the 20s?
27.
Okay, so there we go. We were able to go 27 episodes without having to delve into my primary list. So that's pretty good, I would say.
Well, 26 episodes.
Oh, 26. So there you go. Oh, I have the 27 for it. Yeah. I should have waited for another episode, but then it would be yours. Okay. Just to synchronize our version numbers with MoGenera, which is so very important for all the OCD people out there.
that would be kind of cool.
Okay. So I assume from the feedback I've gotten from you that you also use MoGenerator.
I'm using it at work, yes.
Yeah, I hear that a lot. It seems to be a pretty popular project, so I thought I'd kind of go over the history of it a little bit and maybe talk about the basics of it, and maybe talk about some things that aren't entirely obvious about it as some tips and tricks. So,
First of all,
yeah,
you came up with the name, yes?
Oh, yeah, you can tell I came up with the name because that's Nancy. yes, so it's a Mo generator. It's Apple likes to call the things that can be persisted manage objects. And so I am probably the evil person who decided to abbreviate that to MOs or Mos. And wait a minute, Mos, that's the name of that one character on The Office. That's the brother of the potato of the beet farmer, right? Mos.
I don't watch The Office.
Oh, you see, it's, that's U.S. Office. Okay. But anyway.
Well, and when you come up with the next major revision, it's going to be Mo Better Generator.
Mo right? Better. That's I have seen that those type of write ups. I've been fortunate that I did not document Mo Generator too well because it's unfortunately one of these things where it's a tool I wrote, so I know it very intimately. I know exactly how it should work, and I don't see the forest for the trees type stuff. And other people have written about it to kind of fill in the documentation gap, like kind of telling you why you'd actually care about this type of stuff. And one of those, you use the Mo Better core data type titles. So yes, it's ripe for exploitation like that. The name is based off this other tool that I've cribbed basically the entire idea and the entire reason why it exists was I've mentioned before my WebOptics background. WebOptics had the granddaddy of core data, which I think we've mentioned in a previous episode, called Enterprise Objects Framework, or EOF. And the equivalents of managed objects in EOF were called enterprise objects, and or EOs. And there was this tool called EO Generator, and it works pretty much the exact same thrust as Mo Generator, except it is for enterprise objects. So when I started using core data in anger, as we seem to say a lot on this show.
You say a lot.
okay. That kind of plays into the Batman type thing, because Robin doesn't strike me as having the intense anger that Batman has. So,
well, the newer ones, he's kind of a scary dude.
Oh, really? Robin's scary now?
The later, there's more than one.
Okay, so I haven't seen the latest Batman movie yet. I'm waiting for Netflix to get out or whatever.
Well, no, this is the comics.
Oh,
no,
the comics. Oh,
movies. Yeah, it's a whole different thing. But yeah, it's very complicated, of course, like most comics. But, okay. But yes,
it's like soap opera in graphical form. Okay.
It really is.
It's soap opera that little teenage nerdlets can say that, oh, I read this, and they aren't ashamed. Where were we? Oh, yes. So I believe we were talking about like the history of EO Generator and Mo Generator, and I think EO Generator actually even used the same template engine with Mo Generator works. Well, I'm getting ahead of myself. So let me just back up here and go and talk about why Mo Generator exists in the first place. So I had this, and so I go to use core data in anger. I was very excited because it was like, of course, there was a contract. You know, that's a beautiful thing about contracting is that you get paid to learn new technologies. And I go to use, I was finally given a new project, and they said, and I think 10.4 was new or something. And they said, oh, yeah, you can make this app 10.4 only. And I'm like, cool. I've been wanting to use this core data thing because I deeply loved Enterprise Objects Framework, and I actually was involved in on a project that used EOF for Mac apps. And so the fact that EOF was not available for widely available for Mac OS X was a real thorn in my side. I saw all the things it could do. So I go to use it, and the first thing that hits me is that and I'll put a link to the original blog post in here, but in order to use, for number one thing is that with core data like EOF, you don't need to actually have subclasses. EOF had this thing called EO generic record, which you could use just as is. You can think of it as a kind of persistent dictionary type thing that is untyped, except it knows about keys and values, relationships, and types of stuff. In core data land, its equivalent is NS managed object. So it's just like if you want things that will persist, you can use that class directly, and that works. And But quite often you want to use subclasses. And subclasses, they're buy you type safety and allow you give you a place to put your data logic. So if you have some logic that's related to, say, a person class, that's a great place to put it. So the common case is actually to generate subclasses of NSManaged object. So I go to create subclasses of NSManaged object, and Xcode has this nice little menu command that will generate source code for you. And it will, and so if I believe that project had, I began off with something like 3 or 4 entities. And so you got 2 menu commands, one menu command to create your declaration and put it and paste it on the clipboard, and then generate the implementation and paste it on the clipboard. And you're responsible for, you know, creating the files and generating the interface and pasting into that .h file, generating the implementation and pasting that into that .m file. That's 2 menu commands for each entity. That does not include actually even creating the files themselves. And then, so that, you know, two menu commands per entity. I think I had 4 entities in that initial project. So that was 8 menu commands. And so maybe if I only had to do this once, I would be willing to put up with the pain. Already is kind of triggering my automation alarms. That's something that should be automated because this is us monkey work, right? Brainless monkey
work. Like a bat signal and the automation alarm.
Automation alarm, thank you. And I'm really liking this interweaving of Batman into Mojener. And then the problem is that it had no concept of course, you're generating these classes so that you could put custom code in there. And there was no support for putting your custom code into it. So what you'd have to do...
Actually, can I stop you for a second? Sure, so are you talking about an older version of Xcode? Because I don't remember it being this hard in recent memory to create manage objects,
right.
Subclasses.
Right, yes. This was, it did get easier later on.
Yeah, okay.
Yes. This was up until fairly recently, I think, was... You know, I've been using Mojo generators for so long, and because the Xcode versions haven't gotten, you know, anywhere close to being as good, so I've been ignoring it. But I seem to remember like Xcode 3.something introduced a better user interface for generating this type of stuff. Like it will generate the files for you, and I think it's still the options to copy and paste accessors and the interface and the implementation. Does it even modern versions even bother generating? Like updating code.
Do they? If you, I think so. Having used MoGenerator for most of the time I've done core data in modern syntax of, I don't know how it handles updates, but I know is that it definitely, well, I believe that it's a lot easier to just say, okay, you're making a subclass of NSManaged object now. You certainly don't have to paste things into files that are then manually created for you. Okay. You don't have to do that. But I think there still is definitely the problem of doing updates after you've created the files for the first time. There's no syncing capability after you've created the files.
Yeah, so I just popped open an Xcode project and selected an entity, and under the editor menu, I have a create NSManaged object subclass. And I click that, and it will offer to generate, looks like probably both the .h and the .m for me. And it even has an option here saying use scalar properties for primitive data types, which is something I will talk about a little bit later.
Right. I wrote some posts about that, about my experience with handling that.
Okay.
But yes, going on for now.
Okay. Yeah. So it looks like the story has gone a lot better. Not anywhere close to what MoGenerator buys you, but it's gotten better. So you already mentioned that it helps with the update story. And so if it was just one thing where you take an entity and you go to generate a .h and .m file, you know, that's something that is pretty straightforward and something that looks like Xcode has caught up with MoGenerator there. It's I mean, it's still, it's a pain. It looks like you have to select a bunch of, well, maybe you can, let me see. Can I select multiple things here? And, oh, I think I can select multiple things and create. Yeah, it looks like I might be able to do multiple entities at the same time. That's good. So it doesn't, it's not the matter of where you just have to do this for each and every entity. That used to be the case in the older Xcodes. Well, it looks like Xcode 4 has gone a lot better in that respect. But where MoGener really shines is that it steals this concept that was pioneered by EO Generator, which there's this design pattern called the generation gap. And the idea here is that we have code that's generated by the machine for the machine, by the computer for the computer. And you have generated code, at least initially, kind of outline sketch of human code, that this is the code that as humans rewrite, and we don't want it overwritten ever by the computer, by the machine. So the idea here is that you have NSManage object, and usually what happens is that you have a direct subclass, and we can call it like my class. And in the kind of standard way Xcode wants you to do things is that it puts both the generated code for the machine and the template code for the human in one file, in one class. And it was to be myclass.m, and you have some at dynamics in there, and you have the implementation declarations in there, and that's where you start typing your human code, your value add, the reason you have a heartbeat and you exist and all this. Well, maybe you probably have, like, you know, human value and all that, but, you know, for getting paid reasons or open source reasons, I don't. So
it's like having the Batcave and Wayne Manor all in the same place.
Wow, okay, I think that's stretching it a bit too far, but...
Probably.
So the idea is that you want to be able to easily iterate on both the human side of things. That is, you add your custom logic, and you also want to, on the machine side of things, that as you're manipulating your entities, as you're adding new instance variable properties, as you're adding new fetch requests, that type of stuff, and that you want the machine side to keep up with you. And that's where Xcode really falls down. It's where MoGener really picks it up. And that MoGener solves the problem, like all computer science problems, by adding a level of indirection. And you end up, so instead of us having my class .h or, you know, .m and .m, we add another layer, another subclass in there, which would be underscore my class .h and underscore my class .m. And then this is the subclass of NSManaged object. And then the underscore kind of gives you a hint that this is not for you, to quote, I guess, Pearl Jam. I don't know why that came out. And it puts a nice little scary, if you look at what MoGener wrote for you there, is that it says, do not edit this file. It puts it in right in the header that this is constantly automatically updated and generated and your changes will be blown away. So, and then you have the subclass where you put your nice human thing that would never be touched by the machine. It will never be edited by the machine. So the idea is that the files that begin with the underscore are for the machine and will be constantly overridden by the machine and always kept in sync with your XC data model. And the subclass that has the friendlier human name is where you put your human code and your custom logic. And by keeping those two things separate, you don't have to worry about merging the two worlds all the time. You don't have to worry about the Batcave and Wayne Manor. Yes. Yes, I can't believe you made me say that, but
yes, mission accomplished.
So I shipped MoGener 1.0 in October 1st, 2006. So that makes it, by my reckoning, it's about a little over 6 years old now. And it was an experiment where I wrote this tool. It was one of these things where it's the simplest thing that could possibly work. Get out the door and announce it. And back then, kiddies, we didn't have GitHub. So I think I put on SourceForge then or whatever. And it was pretty lame. It had a bunch of bugs, but it was good for my one project. And I also want, it was a bit of an experiment just to say, you can kind of announce this thing, get out there, and see if anyone even cared. And so it was not at all polished. And obviously through the years, it's got a lot of patches, a lot of feedback, and it's almost a it's a shining example of kind of the ship early, ship often type of mentality that open source often encourages, and how well Mode Generator has done over the years in terms of how it's grown in feature sets and maturity, and it's really worked out well in terms of, you know, I've obviously been putting in a good amount of effort in over the years, but a lot of features were created by other people and integrated directly, and it's been really great. I'm really happy I went and open sourced it all those years ago. Okay, so I have a few things that kind of the additional sales pitch for why you should use Mode Generator, and why, and what's kind of things you might not know about. So number one, Mode Generator will write, oddly enough, one of the common things you think, or is common, that you'd want to do is to create a new manage object. That seems like a pretty common thing you want to do, is that I have this class and I want to create an instance of it. And because of Core Data adds its own layer of indirection there, you just can't say, you know, my class alloc init. You need to go through and you need to have an entity description, and you need to insert it into a manage object context. And for some reason, Apple didn't tie this directly into like NSManage object. So there's this very kind of non-intuitive thing you have to do, is that you have to talk to NS entity description, and you have to then tell it to allocate. You have to find in the instance of the class's entity, then you have to insert it into the manage object context. And this is just kind of, it's a really weird kind of like layer of indirection there that is very non-obvious to especially Core Data newbies. But this in general is a pain. So that's one of the first things that is put into the machine subclasses for you, is that all generated classes have this method called insert in manage object context that takes the manage object context and does that weird little dance for you behind the scenes. So that kind of makes the common case easier. And there's a few projects that also build on Core Data. I know a popular one is Magical Record. Have you ever used Magical Record, Andrew?
I don't believe so, no.
Okay.
What is it?
It's kind of tries to make Core Data feel easier to use and maybe feel kind of more like Active Record. But
Okay.
Yeah, it's... and I understand it plays very well with Mode Generator. I haven't used it myself, but I talked to the guy who wrote it, and where he's a fan of Mode Generator, and looking at it, it doesn't look like it's like everything is magical, like an Active Record that, yeah, you know, there's a bunch of magic behind the scenes. It seems a lot more straightforward and stuff like that. So it seems like a pretty nice project, but again, I just haven't used it myself, and so apparently those two play pretty well together. And I forget the exact wording that Xcode had up, but I talked about the scalars being generated there. So
yes.
Core Data, all the attributes want to, behind the scenes, they're all NS numbers. So if you're dealing with an int16 or int32, all that, those end up being wrapped into NS numbers as they're being dealt with Core Data. And if
I'm looking at the post that I wrote, and I actually have a screenshot of it, and says it's an options checkbox saying use scalar properties for primitive data types.
Yeah. And so this is, again, something that Mode Generator had to deal with. It didn't have to deal with, but it did deal with, because this was a big pain, that NS numbers are fine for wrapping this stuff and kind of boxing, unboxing. But again, that gets to be really tedious really quickly. And so what... Mode Generator's templates will, if you have, like, say you have a property named age, so that would be an NS number, that the Mode Generator will create an age value property. An age value will be, I don't know, in 32, let's say, because we're going to live very long, apparently. This allows you, if you want to, say, increment that age, it just becomes a simple matter of object.age value++. and that will wrap the – it will handle all the boxing and unboxing that has to be done. In this sense, to really simplify the code, a fairly recent addition to Core Data is that they will support this kind of directly now. And I'm not too sure about the extent of the magic there or the runtime magic. Maybe, Andrew, you could clear that up. Does that mean that you cannot get at the NS number implementation age, or is that I imagine with like value for key or something like that, that'd probably come back as an NS number.
Sure, that would still come back as an object because that's how value for key works. But the default age property will now be whatever type you set it up to be, and it will use like uint 16 and uint 32 or uint 64. Like it won't give you just like NS integer, which can vary depending on the operating system.
Okay.
It will give you the exact type. And yes, there's I don't believe in the boilerplate that they give you anyway, there's any fallback to give you the number. It's all just the scalar at that point.
Okay. Well, that so how do they deal with nil then?
Well, that's a good question. As far as I can see, that just would give you zero.
Okay. So there's no way to basically say, right, I don't know this person's age.
Right, so that's what you lose by going to scalars.
Okay, so that yet another mode generator advantage is that you can have your cake and eat it too. You do have to append that value onto the end, which is kind of sucky, but mode generator could turn this around that maybe is be more like the Core Data defaults, and that age would just be the scalar, and then we could have like an age object thing.
Age
that
object,
actually,
right?
Yeah, because
that's the thing that I noticed when I was working through this is because the way that it's set up is in the templates rather than in the core functionality of MoGenerator, you're totally free to screw around with that, which is what I did. I made the scalars to be the thing that called age, for example, and then did whatever I wanted with the other version without needing to delve into the guts of MoGenerator itself. Very, very helpful for someone who doesn't want to learn all the intricate details of MoGenerator to be able to really play around with the templates quite thoroughly.
Yeah. So since we're talking about templates, I'll kind of bump ahead to that. As you mentioned, there's a large chunk of MoGenerator's functionality is embedded in these templates, and MoGenerator ships with a default set, but there's a bunch. If you look at MoGenerator's project now in GitHub, and there's a few more in there, notably, Apple changed how they wanted your Core Data as managed object subclasses to be written. Used to be that they kind of wanted you to use the absence size or write your own methods, but then they got the at dynamic religion, and so that was I think that was around 10.5 or something like that. So there's still some the older templates that support the older way of how Apple wanted you to write your subclasses. That's still there if you need to support an older system, whatever. Although that's largely legacy there. But there's some other interesting tweaks in there. Louis Gerbaug wrote some pre Core Data iPhone classes. So before the iOS had Core Data, you could generate basically classes that knew how to persist themselves. And Dan Wood also contributed this is basically three versions of this kind of idea. So the idea is that you kind of write out your class hierarchy and do these things that you want to persist and in your data modeler. And then, but when you go to generate code, you generate code that actually isn't an as magic object subclass, or doesn't even use Core Data. It might just use like standard, maybe it serializes to JSON or plist, or it uses NS Coder. But so Louis Gerbaug wrote a version of that, and Dan Wood wrote a version of that, and the current kind of bigger project that got folded into MoGenerator is this thing called Panzo, which stands for Plain Old NS Objects. There's this thing in the Java realm called POJOs, which is plain old Java objects. And the idea is that instead of having to like have crazy subclasses of persistence frameworks and all that, that you just can use this plain old Java objects for. And if you say you deserialize from persistence framework, that it will deserialize into a plain old Java object. So it doesn't, that Java object doesn't actually is, you know, in its own world and could, is, hasn't, does, it's decoupled from the persistence framework de jure. And so the Panzo is similar along those lines. You have NS objects that know how to serialize themselves and stuff like that. And it has things like object graph management, where I believe it can serialize itself even if we have cycles in there, much like CoreData will do. But this is all kind of built into the NS object machinery instead of the CoreData machinery. So it's a specialized usage for sure. But this is kind of gives you a hint of the kind of the flexibility of what mode generator buys you. It's not just this kind of this simple data dumping type thing. Is that it's pretty flexible, as you notice yourself by being able to change things. One other template I want to mention is that Brian Webster wrote a template that XC data models used to be. Much less diffable. We seem to talk about this topic a surprising amount about diffability of things, but the XC data model itself was fairly opaque and much kind of like the ZIBs. And when you made changes, or if you want to see how the two XC data models were different from each other, it was quite hard to figure that out. And so Brian Webster contributed a template that would just kind of dump an ASCII plist style. Dump of the various entities and their attributes and all that. And so it was great for diffing. However, again, Apple has fixed that, and the new data format for XC data model is much more diffable. So a lot
Damn
of these
you,
are
Apple.
Yeah. So Apple's cleaning up its messes. Hooray! As if you look at a lot of the stuff that Mojang provided was kind of dealing with things that I wish were different. And fortunately, here we are 6 years later, and things are different. So that's good stuff. But fortunately, or unfortunately. Is that Mojang definitely still is very useful and very recommended. A couple other things that it adds is the something I'm pretty proud of that took a bit of working to do is that the XC data models have the ability to specify fetch requests in the model itself. So you don't have to write code that says, you know, this is the entity, these are the parameters I need to fill out, or the NS predicate. You know, you create your predicate, maybe you put a string, a predicate format string in there, and you build it up. So that you actually can declare that and define those in the model itself. You don't have to do that in code. And since I'm a big proponent of minimizing amount of code, I'm a big fan of these model-based fetch requests. And what Mojang can do is that it can take these fetch requests and write wrappers for you, that it will find these requests, figure out what parameters they require. So if you're like, if you have a, again, going back to the person entity example and in the age example, if you want to find people within a range of age, you can specify that in the model, and we can say find people by age. And in that case, the age would, maybe it's age range, like min range or min age or max age. Those would be two parameters. It will actually generate the method with those two parameters, and we'll do all the correct parameter marshalling for you. Excuse me. And it will even handle cases where if you name things the right way, that if you just say, you know, fetch people by age, it will hand you back a NS array or NS set. But if you look at, but if you actually say fetch one or one person by age, I forget the exact syntax, this is the exact name there, but then it will look for that one, that O-N-E, and it will know that you are returning a single object. And it will, so in that case, it would be, I guess, probably like a person mo. So instead of the return type on that fetch request wrapper would be a person mo instead of being an NS array. And it would even do things like return an error if you get more than one, because you are expecting, like if the fetch request ends up finding more than one object, it will, I believe, return an error. Yes, it will return an error. So it's a little bit of nice intelligence in there. I know you mentioned that you were tweaking the templates yourself, and this is actually probably a sore spot in MoGenerator, that we use the MISC merge engine, which is almost a probably episode in itself, and it's definitely not the friendliest of syntaxes. When you were modifying the templates, Andrew, were you finding it pretty tedious to get in there and do your change or what?
Well, I've used a variety of ways of embedding programming logic in non-programming files. You know, specifically, I've used a variety of ways of embedding app logic, back-end app logic into web pages back in the day. And so this didn't really feel that separate, that different than that. They were mm-hmm. ways to create loops such that you could have lists of things. There were ways to put various pieces of information into the template to have them show up. So I didn't, and I certainly didn't. I mean, even if there is a manual for all of the things you can do, I didn't read it from beginning to end. I just read the bits that I needed to. I found it quite easy to put it all together, put together the things that I wanted to put together. Probably the thing that was most annoying for me was that you needed to leave in certain returns even when they didn't create value. So the machine-generated code, which, of course, machine-generated for machines, not really meant to be the most aesthetically pleasing formatted code out there, but there were still a lot of empty lines.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's my only complaint about it, and it's not even I wouldn't bother trying to fix that if that would, you know, cause more complexity or anything else. But that's the worst thing I found. So you do have to, you know, it's a new little language to learn, but it's not hard.
Yeah, I would say it's very comparable to all the other template-y type languages out there. It's probably the big problem is that because it's its own kind of thing, is that it, out of the box, the syntax coloring doesn't work. So you open up in BBEdit or TextMate or what have you, and it tends to look all black and white, so it's harder to pick things out. In MISC merge, it's highly flexible, and I could even pick kind of delimiters that would match something like ERB that would be supported syntax coloring wise with all the others. Like, you know, obviously TextMate and BBEdit, I'll support that. But that said, I'm worried that then that would give like people false hope that this is something that, I mean, that I don't want them to look at and say, oh, this is ERB, and it's definitely not, because like how you do loops is different. And so I've pretty much decided to keep it the same. One of the really nice things about MISC merge, of course, is that it's written in Objective-C, so that there's no bridging there. That the, you know, core data is obviously also written in Objective-C, so when you bring up your NS entity description and you're trying to iterate all its properties, that's, you know, it's how to express that in MISC merge is basically you're talking directly to the objects. And if you look at how CoreData is, I mean, if you look at how MoGenerator is written, it has a bunch of categories on it just to ease things like iterating various attributes of an object or a class, and also prettifying things and making things look better. So yeah, it's definitely highly functional, and it and I don't see it changing at all. It for a while there, back when maybe Objective-C was looking a lot more stale, and it was Mac Ruby was looking pretty good. And this is before Objective-C 2.0, when it was clear that Apple was reinvesting in Objective-C, that I wanted to do a version of MoGenerator. In fact, that was kind of like my idea of what the next version would be, is that, you know, Apple's putting its own its serious resources into Mac Ruby, and hey, we have ERB, so that sounded like a pretty good slam dunk to me. So I wanted MoGenerator to use ERB's templates in a newer version. And then, of course, with Mac Ruby being pretty highly integrated with Objective-C, that'd be, you know, basically you have, I wouldn't say no bridge, but very little bridge there. And I was thinking that that'd be great. Of course, ERB, it doesn't even have that nicer syntax. But as you mentioned, probably the biggest irritation, especially among the OCD types, is that you tend to have to leave returns in, and you end up with like this a lot of like empty lines or weird spacing in your source code. And ERB is pretty good at dealing with that. You can mark when you put it. Its little tag there, you can, I think you put a minus some special place, and you can basically say, you know, I'm putting a tag here, but when you evaluate this line, let's remove the fact that this line that contains only a tag ever existed. So it can collapse that white space that would normally be generated. And, you know, maybe we could add that type of stuff to MISC merge. MISC merge itself is a pretty ancient project. It goes directly back to the next step days. And, you know, that's one of the interesting things about kind of sucking in MISC merge into the Mogenera project is that various people have put various amounts of effort into kind of keeping it alive and modernizing as we go. And I did break off the MISC merge project separate from MoGenerator, but I haven't been 100% accurate in terms of backporting all the changes that people submit via the MoGenerator route to it. But MISC merge is its own standalone project, and it's really intense. It's, you know, it's basically a programming language interpreter that's pluggable with your own custom commands. And it's written in Objective-C, old-school Objective-C, and with pluggable delimiters, all that, it's amazingly powerful, but it's its own mountain to climb. But, you know, as you mentioned, you shouldn't be too scared of the syntax. And it looks like we're going to be staying with it for a foreseeable future. Okay.
But do you think that it's holding MoGenerator back at all by using such a code base, which is not getting a lot of its own growth and progress?
No, I don't think it is. I think if it's holding MoGenerator back in any way, it's more the fact that people are fearful of editing the templates because they look pretty gnarly, and it's its own world, and it's not scary once you actually delve in and actually start, you know, basically reversing it in your brain, trying to figure out how I add my little piece of functionality, and but I do feel it scares people. And obviously something like ERB would produce cleaner code, and I think people would be more likely to jump in and do template tweaks. But it's not like I'm really hurting for template tweaks. I seem to get a good number of pull requests for those. So it seems like it's not too much of a barrier now. Another nice thing of that was added to the templates was that NSFetch results controller can be generated automatically for, the creation code can be generated for too many relationships, so that bit of drudgery can be eliminated there. And one thing that's definitely highly undocumented that is really handy is this thing that that automates NSManaged object IDs. Do you know what the NSManaged object IDs are good for, Andrew? Not NSManaged objects, NSManaged object IDs.
Sounds familiar, but I don't remember offhand.
Yeah, it has to do with core data threading mostly, and so it turns out that, you know, NSManaged objects exist in a context, and NSManaged object contexts are really assigned to one thread. So if you want to pass an NSManaged object from one thread to the next, you don't do that. That's bad. What you can do is you can pass the NSManaged object ID, which is basically is implemented different ways, but usually it's kind of like a UUID that you can pass from one managed object context on one thread to another. And
right, and then look it up in the other context.
Pretty much, sure. And you're right, right. So it's like under the hood is the primary key. So these two NSManaged object contexts probably boil down to one persistent store coordinator and one persistent store, or, you know, obviously could be multiple persistent stores, hence the persistent store coordinator. But the idea is that then you can, you know, quote-unquote fault or page in that NSManaged object into the second NSManaged object context. And so then you have two NSManaged objects kind of vying for, you know, and you modify one and you have to merge them. And that's beyond the scope of this podcast. But the standard templates offer is that it will generate. So if you have an entity called person, it will, along with in your machine files, it will generate one that will. So you'd have, you know, _person. or underscore. Usually I like to have a mo suffix, so it'd be underscore person mo, but alongside it will be person MOID, or if you want to be dorky like me and actually try to pronounce this, I call them moids.
So moids.
Moids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's kind of like how people from New Jersey pronounce bird, Boyd. So it's so the nice thing about moids is that they give you type safety. And because if you're passing around NS Magic object IDs, they all look the same. You know, they're this. You know, I was going to actually do a Matrix reference, but I guess I was on the pre-talk. We're on the Batman movies, not Matrix movies. Okay. So the nice thing about the moids is that you're not just passing around and naked NS Manager object IDs, that you can give them. You can say this is a person moid, and so this really helps if you like have to store an instance variable or you're passing between threads in a way that like invokes methods. That this really helps document your code, because otherwise, if you write multi-threaded core data code, which I don't know if I would recommend in the general case, but if you do, this helps give you that nice layer of type safety. So that's a nice thing that's included. And so I'm wrapping up here. Let's have two more things to talk about. A few versions ago, I used to distribute MoGenerator strictly in an installer package. And installer packages are evil, and that's especially generating them, and that's totally an upcoming topic. And I've been very happy with the default way of doing it now, which, well, in my mind, is a default way, was using Homebrew. And Homebrew makes installing MoGenerator as simple as just like brew install MoGenerator, and it's also equally as easy to keep up to date that way. So it's I'm a big fan of that. I eventually would want to drop the PKG support, but unfortunately I seem to get a lot of downloads of those, and I can totally understand that, because I know that I was hesitant to start with Homebrew initially, and often it's like, I think even, and no, I don't install Git that way anymore. But even after Homebrew supported Git, I still installed my own custom Git from the PKG installer for a while. Then, so I know there's inertia there. So I don't think it will go away. I just wish I could go away. And the final thing that I want to talk about is Xmode, which is the Xcode plugin for MoGenerator, which is totally cool. And so the problem is that MoGenerator is a command line tool, and which is pretty awesome, but to integrate into Xcode, it's a pain. What you end up having to do is, you have to write this, invoke this command line somehow, point it at your Xcode data model, and then it's going to spit out a bunch of files, and then you got to somehow reintegrate those into your Xcode project. And Xcode has this kind of what I view as a fundamental failing, that there's no way in Xcode to point it at a source folder and say, what's ever in this folder, just assume it's part of the project. And so that would allow you to use, tools outside of Xcode to, that add and remove files I guess modification is so much a problem. But if Xcode would allow you to basically set up a tracking folder, then that would solve a lot of the problem. Because if you add a new entity, then obviously that's a new .h and .m file. In the case of MoGenerator, that's actually four, because you have the underscore versions of the same file. So that's four files you have to deal with. And of course, if you delete entity, then you also have to remove those files. Otherwise, you'll get that nasty red file showing up Xcode project that might end up in a build error. So Xmode automated all this. So all you'd have to do is you'd have to, quote-unquote, opt in to Xmode. And in order to opt in is that you open up the comments section on your XC data model file, and you type in Xmode, all lowercase, one word, one so X-M-O-D, and then you'd close it, and you open it up, and you can do your changes. And whenever you would save that, through the magic of being an Xcode plugin, is that I would notice when you're making changes to an XC model D file, and it would invoke MoGenerator, the MoGenerator command on your behalf. And even better than that is that it those files that were generated, it would create a source group for those generated files. And if you add an entity, it would automatically add them to Xcode. If you delete an entity, it automatically move them to your Xcode project. So it does always keep things in sync. And so this was a total nice way to deal with this type of stuff. The problem is that I have yet, that was in the Xcode 3 land, and I've yet to port it to Xcode 4. I haven't really looked into it too much in terms of what's involved, but it will eventually bug me to the point where I was actually kind of hoping someone else would do it for me, but apparently no one's stepped up yet, so eventually it looks like I'm going to have to do it myself. But there's might be different tacks I would take in terms of implementing now. I tried to be a very good citizen and minimize the amount of work I did in Objective-C land, and instead I tried to use AppleScript's interface to Xcode to walk the project file and to manipulate it and update it and so forth. And looking back on that, that was a big mistake because, Andrew, you probably know this, but Xcode's AppleScript interface is not stellar and is prone to breakage and prone to arbitrary changes.
Yep.
Yeah. So this now I think I would just use the internal stuff because the internal stuff seems to probably be even more, it seems to be more stable than the AppleScript interface, which just would break randomly between point releases.
Well, and I'm not sure Xcode 4 actually has even the same level of AppleScript support that Xcode 3 did.
Exactly.
I'm not sure they ever added it back in.
Yeah. So that might be the only way forward. Yeah.
Yeah. The way that I'm doing it with my work project is I have it as part of the build system. So it's just a build, a custom target mm-hmm. that runs the script every time. And it's not great.
Right. That's the standard way you do it. Yeah, but does it handle the case where you add a new entity?
No, and that's the other problem. I do have to change the project file each time I add new entities. And I just got bitten by that recently because I just recently added a git ignore rule to ignore all of the generated files because, of course, you don't want to be checking them into Git repository, anything like that. And what the current version of Xcode does is it will not allow you to add files to your Xcode project if it's tracking a Git repository. And if the rule says don't add the ignore these, when you try to add it, it'll say, hey, we didn't add these because they're ignored according to Git. And so then you can never add them to your project.
Oh, nice.
And since, unlike Xcode 3, you can't just turn a switch to turn off Git integration, you actually need to move the .git folder itself or rename it for Xcode the next time you launch it to say, oh, this is no longer under Git control, so I'm not going to check with Git before I add stuff for you. It's a real pain in the ass. So it's definitely a pain point, and I don't actually know how you could get around that because even if you use used internal APIs, you could probably get around that, but it's going to be a little dicey. It's just a storm of the confluence of all of these factors of Xcode not handling things very well. I should file a bug on that aspect of the Git Xcode integration because there's no reason you can't add things to a project which are ignored by Git. It's just lazy programming on their part that they didn't see that and see that was a problem, but it does impede MoGenerator integration, unfortunately.
I see this I'm glad to part company with you here that I actually the simple way to part this to solve this is to just check in that generated source code, and I philosophically agree with you that check in the generated code because it can be derived and you want to keep things pure, but practically I've had no problems with this. Always checking in my generated source code. I do. Probably the worst part of it is that sometimes I get spurious commits that saying, this generated code has been updated because I changed the model. And so the generated code kind of goes along with the model changes, but that's okay.
Yeah, no, I can see that. I can see, yeah, if I were starting from scratch, that might be something that I would do instead. It annoys me to have to do it. But yes, that's the realistic approach.
Okay. Yeah, so that does it for me. I can't believe we're already at 55 minutes. Feels like I just started talking about this, but that's why it makes a good topic. So anything else you want to add?
Well, I did find a problem with upgrading from 1.2.3 to later versions that things stopped building properly. Mm. But I think I'll leave that as a cliffhanger for our for listeners, because we don't really have time to talk about it in too much detail. But I'll talk with you about it offline. And if there's anything interesting for people to learn about that, then I'll write up another post about it.
Okay. I also add the cliffhanger that there was a bullet point that I've skipped over, but I won't talk about. But I'll say that the default templates are now built into the binary itself. And that's an interesting story on how that came to be.
Mm, okay. Well, this is also very comic book-like. To end. Alrighty. Please visit our website, edgecasesshow.com, all one word, for show notes, a link to our podcast on iTunes, and more. And you can also find us on Twitter. Now, did you see, we actually got, well, maybe not us specifically, but people were making fun on Twitter of people who always spell out their usual Twitter.
I was enjoying Schwa's deconstruction of all the various technical podcasts, yes.
But you know what, damn it, I'm going to do it anyway, because we might have new listeners. So I am Apontius, A-P-O-N-T-I-O-U-S. And Wolf is his last name, Wrench. That's the word rent, R-E-N-T, plus Z, plus S-C-H. We'll see you next time.